Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the season closer of season 4 of the Power of Privilege and Allyship podcast. My name is Funke Abimbola, and I'm the CEO and founder of the Austin Bronte Consultancy, a global consulting firm whose main goal is to improve leadership by leveraging the impact of diversity, inclusion, belonging, and equity across the business world. As we close out Women's History Month, I am so thrilled to be interviewing today four exceptional male gender champions. And many of our regular listeners will know how strongly I feel about the role that men have to play in the whole gender equality debate. In fact, I don't see how we can get to gender equity without men stepping up. And we really do have four amazing male gender champions joining me today on the podcast. So today, I will be speaking to Richard Pickard, Paul Christopher, Kai Stett, and my son, Max Abimbola. So welcome, gentlemen, all four of you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So all four of you have been interviewed at some point, and you know, Max, of course, will be very familiar to our listeners as co-hosts. Uh-huh. But would you mind, starting with Richard, would you mind introducing yourself briefly to our audience, please?
No problem. My name is Richard Pickard, and I run my own recruitment business in London called Inclusive Search. I have 20 plus years recruitment experience, and I've spent the last 10 years or so either on the boards of international recruitment firms or working as CEO. And in 2018, I decided to create a different type of recruitment business to the norm, one that focused on championing women and candidates from underrepresented groups. Fundamentally, equality is pretty important to me, and I wanted to make sure that whenever my clients were making senior or strategic hiring decisions, that they were considering a cross-section of candidates and not just being presented with a traditional list of white male candidates. I've won a bunch of recruitment awards, and in 2021, I was the best talent voice in the UK, and I was also listed in top 50 trailblazers in gender equality.
Fantastic. So, you know, our listeners will see why I wanted Richard to come back again. Thanks so much for that, Rich. Paul, over to you for a short intro, please.
So my name is Paul Christopher. I'm the managing partner of Morant in Hong Kong. I also look after the corporate and funds practice there. I moved to Hong Kong to set the office up. So I've been there well over 10 years now. And in that time, we've had significant diversity in our partnership ranks. We've got a gender, a male-female split now of roughly 50% women. It's actually been higher than that at times. And I'm a parent with a son, 20 years old, who's at Bristol University, a daughter who's just about to do her A-level. She's 17.
Fantastic. And again, welcome back, Paul. And Caius, welcome back again. Would you mind introducing yourself to our audience, please?
Yeah, thank you for having me back. I'm Caius. I'm a first year undergraduate law student at the University of Exeter. I'm currently on the student council in the role of community officer. And as part of this role, I'm on a violence against women and girls action group committee, where the council have set a pot sum of £5,000 aside to improve the safety of women and girls when they're on nights out in Falmouth, which is the main point of focus for that. So I'll probably speak about it more later, but we're currently working on how we can sort of ameliorate the safety of them there. I'm also a first year course representative, so I also help sort of mitigate problems between my peers, and I've helped sort them out on a few occasions this year.
I'm sure you did sort them out, Caius. I have no doubt of it. And Max, introduce yourself, please.
So yes, everyone, returning again. My name is Max Abimbola, and I'm a first-year computer science student at Newcastle University. But widely, I'm a student ambassador for computer science, which means I cover quite a wide range of roles. From showing people around the different facilities to trying to promote the course, especially to underrepresented groups in the course, like, you know, unfortunately, women and girls. Girls are a very underrepresented group in STEM, and I'm really trying to push that. I'm trying to change that. And more widely, earlier this year, we were doing a boycott on some of the clubs in Newcastle, because if you check the news, there was a terrible, terrible, terrible issue and a massive like upjump in spiking issues. So we decided to, on a specific day when we knew that the clubs were really going to be heaving, we decided to boycott, we decided to not go. And thankfully, like the day after, the clubs decided to release a statement and they decided to make changes. They decided to put, you know, all sorts of things in place to make sure that these things stop happening or that these things are happening a lot less. So I'm really happy that that actually happened.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, guys. And normally at this point, I would ask about career paths and so on. But given that you've all been interviewed before, I'll just reference the various interviews I've already held with all of you so we don't duplicate. Because I really want to get down to the nub of the, you know, first of all, the theme for Women's History Month this year was breaking the bias. You know, there was a lot around bias and what we can do to combat bias. But what does the word bias actually mean? I mean, Kais, what are your thoughts about bias and what it actually means to you?
I think it comes in a variety of forms, really. I think obviously you have your unconscious biases and the opinions you form based on certain groups of people, even anything in life, really. You associate characteristics or traits to people based on what your experiences have been. But a bias is also an unconscious awareness of what's different about people and then from that, how then people are treated differently as a result.
Yes. No, I really, really love that. And how about you, Rich? Because you're coming from a recruiter headhunter point of view. So what's your understanding of bias?
Well, I did a little bit of research and the dictionary definition apparently is a strong inclination, either favourable or unfavourable, or a preconceived opinion about something or someone. So I then decided to go to the font of all knowledge, Wikipedia. And that said, bias is a disproportionate weight in favour of or against an idea or thing, usually in a way that is closed-minded, prejudicial, or unfair, and it can be innate or learned. And that probably was the most interesting bit for me. I think innate bias is really interesting because I think most of us probably don't even realize, unless we very intentionally explored it, that linked to our own upbringing and probably intersecting with our own level of privilege, we've been raised to develop opinions about things and people and groups. And a lot of that probably makes us quite closed-minded, prejudicial, or unfair, but it's totally invisible to us. Unless we actually really, really explore it, we probably don't even realize our own biases. And so we think it's really strange, and we're also probably in denial that we even do it. So I'm not sure that answers the question, but that is what I think about, and I think it's worth discussing and exploring.
Absolutely. No, you raise a really important point about the lack of awareness of the bias in itself, which, of course, can be a major stumbling block, Rich. I mean, Paul, what are your thoughts on bias?
A couple of good definitions there. The key concern that I have when I start to think about it is that it isn't anything necessarily absolutely explicit. It's not necessarily something that you are conscious of. And I'll go back to Richard's point, which is why it is probably important to explore it some more. And it can also affect things without, it doesn't necessarily have to be overt either. So there's the various, but you know, there's a gender role bias that we could talk about. There's the prove it again bias, proximity bias, which I think is, again, is that sort of the more you inform yourself on these things, the more actually you start to go, you recognize proximity bias. Well, you know, you do talk to somebody that's in the office more, for example, and understand a lot more of what's going on in their life than they might do if somebody's working from home more. And it's, I guess it's becoming aware of that and being conscious of it.
Yeah, so that's a very good, you see, you can never beat a lawyer for a good definition, can you, Paul? I mean, you know, the different examples, the different types, you know, especially the point around proximity bias, which is something I hadn't really thought about quite in those terms. But Max, what does bias actually mean to you? What's your understanding of that word?
Well, in my opinion, I think that bias is just a really extreme form of a bad habit. You know, we all have bad habits in our life. You know, you might bite your nails. I know my mom, for me, it's leaving the tap running. That's a really bad habit that I've had to unlearn. And then I really want to focus in on the word unlearn, because we all know that habits can be unlearned if we consciously or actively put energy into it. And I really do think the same thing can be done for bias, any kind of bias. And it's been tried and tested. I mean, you see stories all the time of people who are in really extreme right-wing groups with all these tattoos and, you know, all these ideas. And, you know, they're really ashamed of their past because they've now changed. They've been reformed. They've been exposed to the real world. And they've been exposed to, you know, the groups that they used to hate. And they've realized that actually, like, it's all rubbish. Like, this rhetoric that we're spitting out is not true. So they've left those groups and they've been reformed. So they've unlearned that bad habit. So that's what I really think bias is. I think it's just a really, really bad habit. But, you know, a bit harder to unlearn than just, you know, stop biting your nails, obviously. But still, it can be unlearned. And it's something that you have to put your mind to.
Yes, because it's so deeply ingrained in our psyche, isn't it? You know, it shapes the way we think and then goes on to shape the way that we actually then behave, and decision making and all sorts of things can flow from that.
I was just coming back on Max's point. I think it's a really, really good point. I think for those of us that have either explored it, or if our bias is really overt, then 100%, I think that should be unlearned, retrained, you know, in a business sense, it should be unacceptable. People shouldn't get promoted beyond a certain level if they're incapable of overcoming it. In my world, which is more the hiring of people, I think it's the innate stuff that is really quite worrying, because people... If you've not got, for example, a balanced interview panel to interview candidates, people might not even realize that all they're really doing is just showing a favoritism towards people that look a bit like them or sound a bit like them, or, you know, just I think it's probably a few touch points in the corporate process, you know, succession planning, you know, that performance management. You know, I'm a big believer in inclusive culture, but performance management is really, really difficult, because a lot of managers perceive exactly the same behavior very differently whether a man or a woman engages in it. So a man who comes into a working environment and has got this real kind of take charge attitude and, you know, I'm gung-ho and I'm going to get stuff done and I'm going places, that is often seen by other men in a certain way. And then you get a woman who exerts that type of behavior, and it's often seen in a totally different way. And I think also we shouldn't make the mistake of thinking of gender as all women, because even the progress that we've made in gender, a lot of that progress is progress for white women. And it's not always representative of women of color as well. So you get a black woman in the workplace who comes in with that real take charge attitude, and they're perceived in a totally different way as well. So that seems like too many words, but all I was really trying to say was unlearn your overt behavior, but also systems have got to be interrogated a little bit more to figure out what's going wrong, that an awful lot of senior people and a lot of people in charge of promotion and hiring, maybe they're not even aware of what they're feeling, but they're feeling things because they've got preconceived ideas about groups of people. It's almost tribal behavior, but just totally unconsciously.
Absolutely. I mean, some great points there, Rich, about what we can do in terms of using or adapting processes even to actually break the bias. I mean, Paul, I could see you nodding there quite a lot. You know, what aspect of what Rich shared really resonated with you, and how do you think we can try to break the bias?
Yeah, well, going back to Max's point, I think the overt stuff, that's kind of obvious. And I, in a way, to discuss, I mean, if that's going on in the workplace, that's an absolute shock horror. And it's, you know, appalling in this day and age if that's going on. But I think the difficult area, and it goes into sort of intersectionality and those sorts of areas, is the combination of the various biases and how they may start to affect and the processes that are in place. So, okay, we've become aware of the biases. Some of them we need to work harder on, that draw attention to them to within what we're within our own conscious. But that just simply isn't enough, because the next thing that needs to happen is we need to interrupt that bias. And that requires you to question it. That requires you to look at, where are we in terms of numbers? That's quite difficult for smaller organizations. Obviously, a lot easier when you've got a huge representative sample to look at. But it's starting to really step in to interrupt the bias and say, what can we do to change this here? And I think that's where the involvement of men is crucial, because you're going to have very limited success with an organization-wide initiative if you've just got the people that it's affecting talking about it, rather than you've got men buying into it and saying, look, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to change. And let's try and look at this together to try and work it out.
Yeah, no, that's such an important point. And of course, the whole theme of our discussion is the critical role that men play. But Caius, in terms of breaking the bias, what are your thoughts on that?
I've got quite a lot actually to say in terms of how we as individuals really can break the bias. So Richard said about in terms of recruitment, obviously people would like to see boards more reflective of society in general. You want to see that these things are inclusive. But I think that stems not just in the corporate role world, but in everyday world. I think mainly if you look at bias as a whole, it can seem, I mean, there's no excuse really, but it can seem quite a daunting thing to tackle, particularly the learned biases. Some people might think that these things are so hard to overcome that perhaps there's no way of doing it, so why should I bother? But I think there's something everybody can do. So, like, for example, I'm in a football team, I'm in a jazz band. There are things I can say, I can tackle even a slight statement which I think perhaps is untrue, or which has been formed from sort of a biased opinion. I can say something against that, and I can act as a role model, because I think it was something that Emma Watson said. She said, like, if not yourself, then who will? So if we're all in these groups and we're all around society, particularly as men, if we can challenge the behavior that might not make women feel like they are on the same footing as us, then there's definitely a lot that can be achieved, because it has to start from the bottom. It can't just start from board levels or recruitment levels.
And Max, you know, in terms of breaking the bias and following on from Caius's points, what are your views on that? How can we actually break the bias itself?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked me, because I was about to jump in and I was worried about cutting you off. But yeah, 100%. Caius is absolutely right. Especially at our level, you know, we're not yet in our professional careers. So the way that we can help is amongst our friends, amongst our social groups, amongst the clubs that we're at. And it's really, really, really important to challenge your friends whenever you hear anything that might be problematic, like, you know, because they're not going to listen to anybody else. They're your friends. And it's really interesting. It's like watching them reflect on why they believe certain things, just asking them questions. You don't have to attack them. Let's say they said something like, I don't know, they made some kind of a sexist joke. It's like, oh, why did you say that? So, oh, I don't know, it's funny. It's like, yeah, but why? Like, you know, why do you think this and that? And then they slowly, you see them trying to work it out in their heads. And then it will slowly, when they go home, they'll think about it more. It's just about kind of breaking the seal for them. Because all this learned behavior and all this consolidation, like, they might have been around people that consolidated their beliefs. It all forms this barrier around their beliefs that, oh, okay, I believe this. This is how it should be. But no, when you get somebody else to kind of like break into that and allow them to really analyze what they're really thinking about, it then promotes change in them. And I have seen some changes in some of my friends in the way that they operate, the way that they speak about certain issues, the way they speak about certain people. So, you know, it definitely does work, but it starts with you. It starts with you. You have to call it out. And if you're worried about your friends getting defensive or you're being kicked out the friendship group, then maybe it's better off you're not there. If you don't feel like you're close enough to change these people, then you really shouldn't be friends with them in the first place. I'm sorry, but that's just a fact.
Yeah. There's a lot there about peer pressure and, you know, being prepared to stand out, which is a lot harder to do when you're younger, and arguably sometimes when you're older as well, frankly. There are situations where you just want to be part of a tribe, and it's that tribalistic thinking that can often stand in the way of progressing, you know, some of these issues, overcoming bias. But Kais, I'm really glad you mentioned Emma Watson, because she's, of course, one of the main ambassadors globally for UN Women's He for She initiative. And she actually did address the UN, I think it was 2014 from memory. And she did say, as Kais alluded to, you know, if not me, you know, who? This idea that there's going to be someone else dealing with all of this is far too widely held as a view from people who just don't think they'll make much of a difference. And, you know, UN Women just fundamentally changed the whole debate around gender equity when it launched He for She in 2014. The idea there was that, you know, we're working towards actually freeing up stereotypes for both men and women, because we know that it's the interplay there quite often that young men don't feel they're able to be free of certain stereotypes. I've certainly seen that with far more seasoned professionals. So you've already talked, all of you, in various ways about how men can and do step up. But I'd like to start with Kais and Max around this, because there's a lot going on at the moment, isn't there, in universities. I mean, Kais, what are your views on what young men can do at university to step up?
So essentially, I'd like to start by addressing what Max went with at the start of the podcast. There was a horrible, horrible incident at the start of the university term, so in September, October time, involving spiking of girls. Well, some men as well. I was aware of that, but mostly girls were targeted for horrific incidents of spiking in nightclubs. And down here in Cornwall, where I am, we had various incidents of even attempted kidnappings as well. And I think one thing is about making sure women feel like they can confide in men. So one thing isn't like being an ally, but then another thing is leadership. So you can be both. I think some people will say, like behind closed doors, they will say, yeah, you know, I support feminism. I want to help our female counterparts or whatever. But there's one thing, stepping out there and like people have said, breaking the bias and actually challenging your friends. So at university, what can people do? They can get involved in initiatives. Like I spoke about, I'm on a working group at the moment. I've invited some of my peers to join it, and some of them have, and they've given great feedback. And it's so good to see some men there. We're setting up a Safer Spaces initiative, which has just launched in the Falmouth area, actually. And a couple of cafes have been set up. They run till the late morning, and volunteers from the Women's Centre have been stationed there, and they can just talk to girls even who are struggling with their mental health on nights out, who have felt perhaps unsafe, or even help girls that have been spiked. And I think, you know, firstly, people at my university or at any other university can be aware of these initiatives, know the process they need to go through to help women that they're with and that they're out with, and also challenge the behaviors that you don't think you should condone. That's all you need to do. It's simple, really, but you just have to have the confidence to do it. It's so important.
Very, very important. And Max, you, of course, as some of my listeners will be familiar with, you did sign up to He for She, and you are technically a He for She champion. And do you want to talk a bit more about what you've done around the sort of STEM initiative side, starting from school, and what you did with computer science in particular, and then talk about what's happening at university following the themes that Kais just highlighted?
Yeah, so first of all, I want to really echo what Kais said. Like, he's 100% right. It is that simple, really. Well, like he said, it is that simple. You just need to do it. Get involved. You know, pull your finger out. It's a very simple, like, it's just simple. So I 100% agree with what he said. What I did at secondary school, especially because I did computer science for both GCSE and A-level, and there were a total of two girls throughout both of those courses too. And only one actually made it to then doing an A-level. And she's a very close friend of mine. And wherever I could, I really tried to, and I even said this in a previous episode when we were all interviewed together, I really, really tried to push her to not just disregard herself when she thought that, oh, the boys are doing this, but I can't do that. I couldn't do this. Because it was nonsense. She was getting the same grades as the rest of us. She was doing just as well as the rest of us, but she still believed that she couldn't do certain things just like the rest of us. It was just ridiculous. So wherever I could, I really tried to push her. And she is pursuing STEM at the moment. She's doing I can't remember what kind of course she's doing, but it's still in computing. And I've spoken to her recently and she's really enjoying it. So, you know, who knows where she would have been if I hadn't been there really. Because I, you know, honestly, as much as I love the rest of my class, I didn't see anybody else doing what I tried to do, really. Not by any fault of their own. They just didn't really see it. They didn't really see the need. They just saw her, thought she was going on with her work. Cool. She's, you know, she'll do her thing. But it's really important. And I'm talking to any male that is in STEM. If you see a girl, you need to go up to them and at least try and, you know, if they look like they're struggling or they look like they're kind of overwhelmed or whatever, just make sure that they know that, you know, you're here just like the rest of us. You got the grades, you're just as brilliant, you know, and just keep going. Don't think that you need to stop because you think that it's like the boys are doing this, so I can't do this. Just don't disregard yourself because you are here. I've heard so many times girls for no reason say, oh, I don't want to do the course anymore. I say, why? Is it hard? It's like, no, I just feel like, you know, and I know it's because they think that the boys are doing this, so I can't be doing this. Like the boys, like, yeah, there's a lot I could talk about the culture of kind of STEM, males in STEM. It's a very kind of toxic environment, even for other guys. You know, all these people with, you know, very high IQs, just like in law, that have really arrogant personalities, and it can be quite daunting for people. So yeah, that's what, you know, that's my long-winded way of saying just pull your finger out again. So student ambassador, as I said, I cover a wide variety of different roles. Like I said, I could be showing people around different facilities, but I've really tried to get involved in areas where I can volunteer to push people, especially women and girls and people in underrepresented groups, to pursue a career in STEM, in computer science, any kind of engineering, any kind of, you know, STEM field, just by going in, giving presentations, showing them that, you know, it's fun. Like, it's not just what you might think it is. It's a fun career and it can be for you.
You know, these are such simple things, aren't they? But I mean, you know, moving on to you, Richard, what sorts of things have you seen that have really worked in your line of work to sort of break some of these assumptions, you know, wrongful assumptions about different genders, what sorts of roles might be appropriate for one over the other? What have you seen, Richard?
I think the honest truth is leaders at the top of organizations need to be very, very clear, first of all, that any kind of discrimination of any form is totally unacceptable. And they also then, so there's a punishment angle to it, they also then need to plant a flag and say equality is absolutely fundamental to our company's success. So this is not about ticking a box and saying, yes, we will allow a certain number of people who are not white, male, middle-aged at the table. It's not kind of like a tokenism. This is, the world has changed. The data's pretty clear nowadays. The more diverse your company is, probably the more commercially successful you are. So if you don't want to do it for the right reasons, the fact that it's 2022 and we should all wake up, then do it for the profit reasons, but do it. And leaders need to be very, very clear that a fundamental part of our business strategy is having diverse, balanced teams because we want the most innovative ideas, we want best product ideas, we want everybody to be thinking about a greater representation of our customers and the region that we're in. So it makes perfect sense. But the problem is that to be equal to everybody, the privileged group that currently get all the benefits, they probably have to give a little bit up. And that terrifies people. We'd love an easy solution, but the honest truth is nothing changes unless we disrupt the status quo. So what we're really saying is let's interrogate everything about the current situation. Let's dismantle some of the power structures that exist right now and make it fairer. And the group that sit at the top table right now are suddenly terrified into thinking, well, geez, hold on a second, that means less places for us. Now, for me, I believe that the companies that are progressive, that are going to be the real winners in the future, are the companies that see that as being fundamental to their business strategy and their commercial success, rather than, oh yeah, we should make sure that when we next do our pay, you know, gender pay gap reporting, or when we next have to submit, we can say we've got 23% of women doing. If that's why you're doing it, I think you're totally misguided. I agree with what the guy said as well about allyship. For me, I think it's really, really straightforward. You've got to find your own reason as a man to support underrepresented groups. And the easiest thing for me is, you know, I got into this 6-7 years ago because my daughter was coming to me a lot. She was just about to go to uni. She was looking at me as a mentor. My daughter's mixed race. And I was thinking to myself, oh, wouldn't it be awful if when she goes out into the real world, there were certain obstacles that she had that I never had because she's female and because she's mixed race? And then the more I investigated it and educated myself, the more I realized, hold on a second, she definitely will have barriers because she's female and because she's mixed race. And all I really did was just decide, do you know what? I'm going to get involved in this a bit more actively because I don't want my daughter to have to go through those kind of difficult obstacles. And I think what the guys are saying is the same. You know, when you're out and you're out on a night out with uni, you're just thinking, well, hold on a second, though. I should get involved in this because I've got a sister. If this was my sister getting spiked, or if this was my sister getting potentially kidnapped, or if you've not got a sister, you've got a mother, or just find your own passion to educate yourself a little bit more and be bothered to get involved, because it's so obviously the right thing to do.
It's been great, Richard, hearing your thoughts. And Paul, you are, of course, the father, a very proud father of a daughter. And I know you've done incredible work at Marant. You set up the Hong Kong office, and you are, I think, largely, if not wholly responsible for the wonderful gender splits that you have, and the culture and everything else. So please don't be self-deprecating and claim that you had nothing to do with it, Paul. But what sorts of things have you seen that have worked, Paul? I mean, if you could even look at what's happened within Marant, and specifically the Hong Kong office that you run.
Well, it's continued work in progress. Look, actually, can I just go back a few steps? And it's just great to hear Max and Keith talking in the way that they are about basically what is supporting your friends, you know, I mean, in the broadest sense. And that's the way that I see it. And that's the way that it should be. But it's also great as a parent to hear that there's guys that are out there that are thinking about these things as well. You know, particularly safety is, you know, as a parent, it's your biggest fear, I guess, when your kids go away to uni. So there's some great stuff there. Bringing it back to the workplace, which is possibly a little bit more mundane, full of thornier issues because of the processes and the policies that are in place and all this sort of thing. And it can be quite ingrained, and almost the larger the organization, kind of the less influence you can have on it sometimes. So we've been, as a firm as a whole, it is now a key part of our strategy to deal with and pick up on these areas and actually to have them very much amongst the sort of leadership team, be reviewed on it and be looked at in terms of what contribution are you making on it and rewarding that and so on. What's important to do? Well, you know, I said earlier the awareness thing, that's just really the starting point. It's how you then get to it's, I think it's really difficult to be prescriptive. And I think that's something maybe that's been learned over the last sort of 20 or 30 years with various initiatives. And particularly, you know, going back to this intersectionality point of how things can compound each other. And so certainly one of the areas that I've been talking about recently is this concept of creating psychologically safe workplace environments where people are encouraged to be aware of bias and to actively take steps to interrupt bias where that's happening. And I think that, again, you know, going back to Rich's point, there's a certain level of discomfort sometimes that you can feel in that, and it's not comfortable. But I think it's something that we've got to do. Raising the awareness of bias is important, but it's got to be backed by some of these practical actions. And actually, some of the practical actions, because I don't think everybody's got all the answers, is talking about sharing the experience as well. Out there, are there many people that say, this is a terrible thing to do. I mean, why are we doing it? No, I mean, think people are kind of supportive, and then they go, right, well, what do we do? The extreme stuff. I think that's almost hopefully the easy stuff. It's the more ingrained and the things that are less obvious that are harder to tackle, and sharing that experience and what goes on, I think, is really important. You know, they talk about this sort of concept of looking around the room. Who's there? Who's in the meeting? Who's speaking up? Who isn't? Yesterday, I was asked to start looking at a particular rugby tournament, been going on for best part of 20, 25 years, all male. Suddenly I'm raising the point, well, actually, you know, given the interest and success of the women's game at the moment, don't we need to start bolting that on? Well, there's always an issue with pitches and things like that in Hong Kong, but, you know, so it's things like that, just ensuring that the conversation gets drawn in and asking those extra questions that maybe you didn't once used to.
Absolutely. And you know, just touching again on Richard's point around the very real concern that those who have the privilege currently will feel very threatened by this idea of giving up their piece of the pie. Or, you know, I had a most bizarre conversation with a senior partner of a law firm, a top 50 law firm, about 10 years ago. And he said that, you know, as a white man in his 50s, he felt like an endangered species, which I had to listen and sort of take that on board. But, you know, what strong use of language. I mean, how do you think we can overcome that? You know, this whole concept of, you know, you're in the privileged position, being willing then to give up some of that privilege. How do you think we can begin to tackle that, Paul?
That's an interesting debate that I've not had with anybody. My personal view of what the greater barrier is people getting involved and maybe saying the wrong thing or putting something in the wrong way and being misinterpreted, and the concerns that there are around that. If I talk to people about it and about getting involved, and, you know, all, frankly, cancel culture and the, you know, what people might read in the media and so on, preys on people's minds in terms of getting involved and being more part of it and actually putting yourself in probably a more vulnerable position than you might be doing if you weren't saying something about it and raising it as an issue. In my mind, I think that's the greater barrier, at least with people I have spoken to about it, and people thinking, you know, don't back myself in some way. I really need to be in this privileged position. That isn't it. It's people being concerned about actually going out and advocating and putting themselves out there, what the consequence of that might be.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm really glad to hear that. I mean, I'm hoping that things have moved on, because this conversation was 10 years ago, as I said. But you raised the point, Richard. So what are your thoughts around how we can circumvent that, Rich?
They're fairly activist and therefore probably not well accepted by the mainstream. But I think it's, for me, I think it comes back a little bit to proximity. I think the honest truth is, when you start working closely with people, or when you have, you know, with the guys, different people from different backgrounds in your friend group, I think we all realize suddenly that we're all quite similar, and that there's good and bad in every race and every gender, and that some people are really nice and some people are people that we want to distance ourselves from. Some people inspire us, some people don't, but it's nothing to do with color and gender, really. The honest truth is, it's just good and bad in all of us. And so what we actually need is just to be drawn closer to lots and lots of people from different backgrounds. And then we suddenly get over some of these fears that we've got, looking over the hedge thinking, oh, my goodness. And so what I would do, but again, it's a bit of a quick fix solution. what I would do, honestly, is I would, as that business leader who says balanced teams, diverse workforce is absolutely essential to our business strategy, then as part of leadership training, managers at all different levels, including the CEO, needs to be accountable at board level as well, but managers at all different levels, they need to be trained that you leading balanced teams is absolutely essential to your growth in the business. So until you prove that you can hire, retain, engage, promote balanced teams, you can't be promoted any further beyond you are at the right now. If all you've got is a team of white men, then unfortunately, you're going to stay at the level that you are now. So it becomes part of a leadership. Fundamentally, people will do what they're incentivized to do. And if you want to take it to the extreme and the really activist point, link it to bonuses as well, because people will do what you pay them to do. So if you suddenly say to somebody, as a director, you can't be an MD in our business until you have demonstrated that you can hire, retain, and promote a balanced group of people. And also 25% of your annual bonus is tied to it too. You see how people suddenly figure out the ways to do it. What happened in COVID? We didn't even believe that we could do Zoom calls before COVID. Everybody was 5 days in the office. Then COVID hits. And what happens? Suddenly, we all figure out a way to work from home for 18 months and the world keeps turning. Well, I promise you, all of this group that we're talking about as privileged, they are very, very self-interested in their own remuneration and their own advancement in these big corporates. You link what we're talking about to their personal advancement and their personal pay, they'll figure out a way.
That is so, so true. I mean, I worked in global pharma for a decade. I still have clients within that sector. And at the point when I joined the industry, we were trying to change behaviors. You know, so there'd been years of very bad behaviors, generally with centering around sales and how sales used to be incentivized and leading to undue influence on doctors and other healthcare professionals. And the way that all the pharmaceutical companies did it was just to Richard's point, you know, it literally was, you know, you could be disciplined, dismissed, you wouldn't get your bonus, your performance review would be much worse. And it's incredible when you use that sort of more the sort of stick approach combined with a bit of the carrot approach as well. It really, really does drive results. But I'd love to get some thoughts from Max and Kais around this whole idea that young men could be feeling that, you know, they're giving up something by trying to sort of champion any of this gender equality stuff. I mean, Kais, is this something you've come across at all amongst your friends?
I would say, yes, I have. From my point of view, I'm lucky enough to come from a fairly comfortable background. I mean, in terms of sort of financially, geographically, I lived in a nice area, as you would both know, and sort of ethnically as well. I'm white, I'm male, but like I don't just have these tools of privilege. I'm also lucky enough to have sort of a mindset of how to use it. My mum is a female nurse leader. She's quite outspoken. I experienced this when I got told off in my childhood, obviously. But she's always pushed me to stand up for what I believe in. And I think it's really important that what she sort of, she hasn't told me this, but what I've interpreted from what she's put on me as for privilege essentially, I think means having the tools to help somebody, but then it splits into two forms. You either are aware of how you can use them, or you're ignorant to how you can use them. And I think the main thing we have to do, as especially as young people, like we're a generation of change. We're going to take the mantle into the working world, and we have to ensure that things are different going forwards. We have to make sure that people know that it's nothing to be scared of using your tools to sort of, that it's not going to degrade yourself to lift other people up. Essentially, if you are helping other people, they will help you as well. You're not going to give up your position by helping somebody who is just as talented as you into your position or giving them a leg up in their career, you're only going to improve, firstly, how you feel about yourself. And secondly, you're going to improve how people think about you. And in the future, people need to know this, that people won't want people with these stagnant mindsets. People are going to want people that embrace a diverse working culture. And I think that's really important, particularly as Max would probably agree with, people of my age, we have to embrace the changes. They're positive.
I love that. I love that sense of it's a win-win. Very strong message there around how this is for the collective good. There's no sense that someone's going to lose out. You know, we can all win together. But Max, I'd love you to share your thoughts around this whole idea that young men might be feeling that they're somehow having to give something up. Is this something you've come across? Can you share more around some of the themes that Caius has raised, for example?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, what you guys have said is amazing, amazing, amazing. I really echo everything that you said. I've been nodding my head, clicking my fingers. Like, everything you said is just fantastic. And I need to actually be making some notes, really. But yeah, it's really evident that when people feel that there's a threat to the way they've been living or that there's going to be change, they start to act out. I mean, we've seen this. We saw this with COVID. I mean, look how people started to act out when, you know, there was a lack of toilet paper. Shock horror. The pandemonium that was people stealing toilet paper, selling it online. There was all sorts of rubbish, all because people's way of living was slightly disrupted. Well, you know, not slightly. That's the, you know, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's just, it's really trying to hammer home exactly what Kaya said, that you're actually winning in doing this. Everybody's winning. I mean, like, companies that are diverse are gaining, like, have an economic advantage. We have the data, we have the facts. So in pushing these ideals and in recognizing that, oh no, if I use my privilege and I help people that are underprivileged or in underrepresented groups, that everybody is going to win. Not just them. It's not going to somehow flip where, you know, they're now above me and they're now oppressing me. Oh no, because that's just not how it works. That's not how it's going to happen. Everybody is going to win and everybody will be equal. So
I agree with everything Max said. The other thing, and to add a slightly controversial angle to it, and especially probably from a business context, I think equality is an amazing building block. And I think especially as children, as we go through young adult, you know, life, as we go through uni, equality is really, really fundamental. And I have every confidence that this generation is going to do it as well. I have never seen such intellect and smarts and progressive thinking. This generation is going to change the world. There's no doubt. As regards people who are currently middle-aged and have the current leadership roles, you do need to ask yourself the question, do you support equality or do you support equity? And that is fundamental as well, because there isn't a level playing field, and there hasn't been for a long time. And you've really got to make that differentiation between, is what I want to do be energetic around creating some equity in our organization, or do I just believe in equality? And, you know, we can dive into that a bit deeper if you would like. But I do think there's a distinction. And again, for people that are just beginning their journey of education around these things, I'm not sure that they even appreciate that distinction. I think the words are interchangeable. But I think fundamentally, if you go to most people who are part of underrepresented groups, they believe that equity is the key factor. Whereas if you ask most white middle-aged men, I think they feel that equality is more than enough.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very important point. And Paul, what in your view would you say is the difference then between equality and equity? And then we'll go back to Richard, because I know he's dying to share his thoughts on that as well.
Actually, it was interesting. So this came up probably about a year or two ago in our global partners meeting, that we were talking about equity. And I think Richard's right. I think, in fact, I was just sat there hearing equity sounds like the same as equality. And then we probably spent maybe 15 or 20 minutes drilling into it into a meeting that was maybe only an hour and a half long anyway. So it occupied a reasonable period of time. And yeah, it's obviously about going way beyond the simple metrics of just getting the numbers there. And it's about, you know, we talk about people being able to bring them their whole selves to work and feel comfortable in that as well. And there's always work to be done on that, but there's certainly, I think, enough knowledge around it to encourage that now. It's very different. And we were, it was a very useful sort of distinction that was made to me a few years ago.
What do you think is the difference there, Rich?
Well, it's uncomfortable for most white men, and it's uncomfortable for most people who sit at the top table already. Because, I mean, the honest truth is it's got to be a version in some way, however we phrase it. But, I mean, fundamentally, it's an attitude around affirmative action to right some past wrongs. And, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is you've got to have people playing from a level playing field. And most organisations don't. And by the time they actually catch up through these trickle effect initiatives, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be decades before we've got 50% of the board being female, or, you know, 30% of the board being black female. Or we're just so far away because of what we've historically done. And so it is looking at how in your own organization you are comfortable with this idea of balanced teams are fundamental to our business strategy. Now, then you have to define what balanced teams is. Is that 50-50 women and men? Well, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't have to be. But maybe it should be slightly representative of the world that we live in. So maybe it should be 30% female. I don't know. And then look outside the door. Look in the region that you live in or work in. How many of those people are all white and are all middle class? It's just not, that's not the real world. So the honest truth is people that represent different international backgrounds and different cultures, people who represent different socioeconomic levels as well, if you believe that balanced teams are fundamental to your business strategy, how are you going to accelerate the progress of some people from those groups through into more strategic decision-making positions, more senior positions, and eventually get them to the top table? So it's just figuring out how are you comfortable with unfairly discriminating against some white male candidates to rectify the wrongs of the past. Now, that's really, really provocative language, and I appreciate that. And that's why each individual organization has to be comfortable with that journey for themselves. And some are going to say, we're not comfortable with 1% of that journey. It's all going to be about equality. And going forward, the best candidate's going to win out, but we'll always consider lots and lots of different types of people. But as I say, the distinction for me is, are you passionate about creating some equity or just equality?
Just talking about what steps need to happen and so on, there is good research on that. And I think it's where, you know, I was reading something from the Boston Consulting Group about it. And actually in law, I don't know what the actual percentages are, Funky, right now of women going into law, but even when you and I were at law school together, I think there were probably more, maybe shading it, there's probably slightly more women as undergraduates than men. And that was in the early 90s. That's definitely, whilst there's been progress, it's definitely not equality or probably even equity at the top. And then you start to look at why that is. And the Boston Consulting Group says, it's not explicit discrimination. It's not lack of ambition, but they describe it as small factors and daily hassles. There's no huge, huge roadblocks, but it's those awkward, difficult things that are more likely to apply on the female side of things than the man. And that, you know, a lot of that is kind of the way society's structured and so on. And a lot of it has been in places like the law. It's like, well, you know, we're just an hours culture, so we need to build this. And it And so the flexibility probably just hasn't been given over the years in the way that it's been required. So I'm possibly not quite as reactionary as Richard, although I would completely agree that if you start hitting people in the pocket in some shape or form, that changes actions pretty quickly.
It really, really does. And Kais, I can see that you have some thoughts to share. So over to you.
I just wanted to step in on the points that Paul and Richard were making, just in terms of, from my personal point of view, I've got quite a large Irish family, some of which they all have very diverse opinions. And one thing I found that really, really does help break the bias for people of an older generation than myself is encouraging debate within your close circle. So we often, when we get together, we have huge celebrations for Christmas, in the summertime, whenever there's a religious gathering or something, but we will often have large debates on these topics, and it really helps to understand where people come from with their points of views. And I have spoken to my uncles, my grandparents, and they've said, you know, I didn't understand that, but after debating it with you and with your cousins, with your sister, now I understand. And I think it doesn't have to be privilege that you're afraid to give up. You just have to be willing to understand what your privilege means and understand how it differentiates you from your peers and then what you can use it to do. So that's just one thing I wanted to connect between both generations.
That's such a powerful point that you make there, the ability for the younger generation to actually help the older generation in their education. I know that's something that Max has certainly held me to task on quite a few things. And you do listen. You will listen in that family setup, which isn't a sort of wider society, if you like. You don't feel threatened or got out in quite the same way. And the assumption is it's all being done out of love. People are far more willing to listen, aren't they, Max? I mean, what would you have to share about any of the observations that have been made already around this?
Yeah, of course. And I'll make this quick because I can tell Richard is ready to jump in on this right here. I think that, yeah, I 100% agree. When people feel like they're in a safe space, they don't feel like there's a threat of being, you know, cancelled, fired, losing some major, you know, job that they have. Their real views really do come out, maybe good or bad, but it's important to know where people are really coming from, because I feel like the internet has allow people to be a bit too anonymous, feel like they're a bit too, you know, behind a glass screen, to where they're putting up a persona that they're trying to be politically correct, when sometimes people just need to say it how it is so we can really understand where people are coming from. But I feel like, especially when you're talking to your circle in computer science, and I'm dropping a bit of computer science knowledge, and this might be in, you know, wider areas as well, there's this idea of a recursive algorithm. So an algorithm is simply just a set of instructions that you carry out to complete a task. That's all it is. So for that to then be recursive, it means that you're iterating over that, that the algorithm is actually calling itself, it's referencing itself within itself. It might sound complicated, because it is, essentially. Recursion is a very, you know, mind-bending kind of thing. It's like saying, in order to make a cake, I need to make a cake, or I need to have a cake already. It's like, kind of like that. So in recursion, you have to kind of repeatedly iterate over the same thing over and over again, but making small, small changes each time until you finally reach a base case, which is when the entire thing unravels, you have all the answers, and then the final solution is there. You got the question right. You know, it's calculated, you know, 2 + 2 or something like that. So I feel like that's what it's really like when you talk to people heart to heart about these kinds of issues. You're slowly unraveling the why they think these things, why, you know, their experiences that they've had. And then you finally reach a base case when everything adds up. They realize why they think the way they do, and they can finally make a change. So I feel like that's really what it is.
And it's often those small changes, as Paul was talking about when he referenced the BCG research. It's those, the accumulation of the small things that can often end up having these negative outcomes. And Richard, I can see that you want to share a bit more around this as well.
I agree with what the guys are saying. Look, for me, allyship doesn't need to be any more complicated than commit to at least one action that you're going to take in your own life. That can be allyship, and you can do it step by step by step. That's how I started. I started by just, I wanted to educate myself. I didn't feel like I knew enough. And so I got some books to read. I started following people on LinkedIn. I started watching some YouTube discussions. And a bit like, you know, the guys have said, I suddenly started thinking about things that I'd never really thought about before. And then, a bit like Paul was saying as well, I was pretty terrified as a white middle-aged man to dip my toe into these conversations. But all I did was just give myself the get out at the beginning of the conversation, which said, I'd like to talk about race, but I appreciate I'm white and male and I'm probably going to be really clumsy in my language. So can we have a conversation? And do you promise not to sue me at the end of it? And literally, if you acknowledge your own ignorance, but if you say, I just like to know stuff and I'd like to understand and I'd like to ask questions in a fairly safe environment, most people are really, really happy to share. And then suddenly you start to get your own opinions, and then you can start to become more attuned to your own situational awareness in your life. So a bit like Caius was saying, you know, is, you know, that doesn't matter whether it's in your own family or whether it's on a night out, but you call out a joke or you have a chat with your grandparent who says, you know, well, I've always thought that, and well, why don't we talk that through a little bit more? You don't just let stuff go. And maybe in the workplace, and look, I come from recruitment, which, you know, is a pretty politically incorrect workplace on the trading floor. Thank goodness I've got a slightly different environment now. But, you know, that kind of banter just can't be allowed to stand. Not anymore. You know, you can't just have people saying those things and everybody else just kind of peer group laughing, because then there's somebody in the corner who's keeping quiet but is absolutely mortified. And so it's kind of in steps, and you can become more knowledgeable and more progressive, and you can become slightly more activist as you learn more and as you become more comfortable with it. And just the final thing, going back to the equity point, you know, I am an ambassador for an organization called Black Women in Tech. There is now record numbers of Black female founders and Black women-owned businesses, which I celebrate every single day of the week. If you look at my LinkedIn feed, I shine a light on it all of the time. But why is that? That's not just a positive thing, is it? That's because an awful lot of those Black women are getting managed out of the corporate world and out of the technology world. They've reached a point where they just can't take it anymore. The microaggressions that Paul was sort of talking about, the way that they're treated, the way that men steal their good ideas and repeat them and everybody bursts into applause. They're not even invited into the room. They have to do twice as much for the promotion. That is why there is record numbers of Black female founded businesses right now, is not because they've suddenly all got a laptop and a great idea and they've decided to do it. It's actually because corporate world is managing them out to the extent that they've just said, forget it, I'll do it myself. I'm smart enough. So that's my final controversial point.
Yeah, no, I really, really like that. And it's a great way for us to end. And I'll ask Paul, Caius and Max the similar question around, you know, what one thing, before we say goodbye to our audience, and incredibly, our time is almost up, what would be your one thing that you would leave with the audience in terms of what they can be doing? So Richard has shared a number of different things there. But Paul, do you have any thoughts about the one action point that you'd leave with us?
Yeah, I mean, different people are on different parts of the journey. But for those that are at the start, and we did, you know, talk about those people that may have concern, you know, just start to get engaged in the way that Richard's described. I think it is a process. It is a journey. There's all sorts of very good reasons that we could go through, both statistically in terms of profitability, but also it being the right thing to get involved. And I think it's just a really important thing to do for the future.
I absolutely love that. Thank you, Paul. And Caius, what would be your one thing that you could leave with our audience, please?
I would just like to really reiterate what I've said previously. You're not going to get an award for it necessarily. You're not going to get, as Richard said, sometimes there's a potential that you might do, but you're not going to get a financial package for it. You're not going to get even necessarily, you might not even get praise for it. But if you're that role model, other people will follow you and speak out against the behaviors that will make people feel marginalized. And I think joining with you, you all are surrounded by women, people of color, people of completely different cultures, and embrace it, because it's going to be a huge, huge part of the world in the future. And in the least brutal way possible, you don't want to be left behind.
Thank you, Caius. And Max, before we say goodbye, what would be your one thing?
Yeah, just to, again, to reiterate what everybody said, everything everybody said is amazing. Please take notes, everyone, and, you know, follow these people. Make sure you're up to date on what everything they're doing, because they're doing amazing, amazing things. But just leading on from Caius's point about not being left behind, the world is changing. The world is changing, and it's changing very, very fast. So in order to be ready for that, I'd say you need to educate yourself as soon as you possibly can, and continue doing that. Don't just think that you need to do one, watch one YouTube video, read one book. You know, keep educating yourself, because the world will change even more in the future, and it will continue. It's just, we're changing at such a fast pace that you need to be prepared and you need to be ready to adapt. Otherwise, like Kai said, you will be left behind in the most brutal way.
Thank you so much. This conversation has been absolutely fantastic. And I'm so grateful to all four of you for setting aside this time to talk about this and for us to be able to share these very important concepts as we close out season four. So once again, Richard, Paul, Caius and Max, really grateful to you all. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for getting.
And with that, lovely listeners, incredibly, we are now wrapping up season four of the podcast series. We're going to be taking a very long break over the rest of the spring and the summer. And season five won't be launching until the autumn of this year. But in the meantime, please keep listening to our back catalogue of episodes. We now have almost 90 episodes available with many, many different types of leader, lots to learn, lots to share. The education piece has come across very, very strongly throughout all of this. So my challenge to you, I suppose my final point, is to continue to educate yourselves and please dip in to as many episodes as possible over the next few months. And with that, I'll say goodbye to all of our lovely global listeners for now. It's been a fantastic journey so far, and I look forward very much indeed to my next truly insightful conversation when we launch season five later on this year. Thanks very much, everyone, and goodbye for now.